I'm a Redbeard, and this is Stone sitting across from me, and I can't act stoned yet, because I'm not stoned yet, but let me work on that. While Chris drinks his beer. And I've got a Virgil's root beer today myself.
Non-alcoholic. There is a hard root beer made by a beer company.
I know.
Mission Brewing.
Did we talk about that before?
I don't know. Terrible, though.
Oh, it is?
I
don't know. I like the idea.
Because I like root beer, and it was not good.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
What about the peanut butter one? Did you try that one?
Peanut butter stout?
Yeah.
By Belching Beaver?
Yes.
It's delicious.
Ugh. Well, okay.
Delicious.
That's all our beer talk for the week. Virgil's root beer and peanut butter stout. On to other things. We're going to jump right into it today, folks. We're going to try and give you what you've been asking for without saying anything this whole time, which is a show within the original confines of the length we decided at the beginning of this whole thing. It's about an hour, and we've been working on it. And now that we've reached episode 6, we think it's finally time we actually try really hard to do that. So we're going to try and do that today. But to start off, we're going to go over some movie news, what's going on out there. So, Quentin Tarantino is in the news. Looks like he pissed off some people, and the wrong kind of people. Something happened. There was a protest in Brooklyn for Black Lives Matter. And he went out and he spoke, saying, you know, we have to call murder, murder, when we see it, essentially. And mm-hmm. when I see murder, and I see the murderers, I'm going to call the murderers, you know, whatever. And it was, you know, maybe not the most eloquent way to put things, but, you know, it's free speech. Obviously, there's limitations to free speech, but this was not one of those situations where he was doing something that caused harm to anybody else.
It wasn't a call to arms or anything like that.
This was simply a matter where he was using his First Amendment rights, I'm assuming that's First Amendment, Jesus Christ, to assemble peacefully in protest and speak his mind on an issue that's important, that we have also voices in this argument that are not just, you know, black voices, that we as people who believe in this statement that black lives and all lives matter, it should be able to speak out in support of our black friends and community members and family members. This is somebody that, from what I understand, Quentin Tarantino was raised very much so in the black community, so I'm not completely sure on his history at this point, but that's something I've heard in the past, and that's why he's particularly comfortable with certain things, like using certain words in his movies that maybe white people feel a little uncomfortable about sometimes. But that aside, it was no surprise for me to see him at this particular rally, and no surprise for me to see him speaking, because he's an outspoken type of person. What surprised me was a police response. Not only did he get boycotts threatened on him from the New York Police Department, where the rally took place, but also eventually from the Los Angeles Police Department, where he lives and makes films. Then we received this quote. Tarantino has made a good living out of violence and surprise. Our offices make a living trying to stop violence, but surprise is not out of the question. Something is in the works, but the element of surprise is the most important element. Something could happen anytime between now and the premiere. And a lot of it is going to be driven by Tarantino, who is nothing if not predictable. The right time and place will come up and will try to hurt him in the only way that seems to matter to him. And that's economically. What I just read to you was not the latest press release from Anonymous, was not a threat from a terrorist group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda. This was a threat from...
His name is Jim Pasco. He's the Fraternal Order of Police Leader.
And I don't know, off the top of my head, I think that sounds like some kind of a union or something like that. It sounds terrifying, though. Whatever it is, if we cannot speak up and speak our opinions peacefully, without hurting anyone, without threatening anyone, without being derogatory, if we can just not speak about the issues that matter to us and our community without the police zeroing in on us and threatening us, he's just an easy target because he's a celebrity. Imagine if this was any one of us out there. This would be unacceptable to treat a human being like this, especially from any member of the police force. And this is, it's weird because he's out there speaking about this problem, and now the problem is turning on him. And it's terrifying to me. And so I wholeheartedly support Quentin Tarantino, and I think this definitely is some pretty big Hollywood news right now. This, honestly, I don't know if maybe I'm just being overdramatic, but This makes me feel like blacklisting probably made people feel back in, like, the 40s. And
the Red Scare.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
rioters getting...
Back, yeah, back when McCarthy era stuff, people coming after you and for your beliefs. I mean, but this is your beliefs on racial equality.
Yeah.
It's so strange to me that any police force in America could speak that way. So, anyways, that's my soapbox rant for the moment. But geez Louise, get out there, folks, and support your local brilliant film director. Moving on, some more movie news. Sandra Bullock might be taking over the reins for George Clooney in the new Ocean's reboot with an all-female cast. I guess that Ghostbusters thing is inspiring a lot of new all-female universe episodes out there. So
it's nice to see. He's staying on as a producer, so he's going to help out with the film. And but she's funny.
Do you know if Soderbergh was involved in that?
He's helping. He's not directing, I don't believe, but he is helping out with it. I don't know if they've picked a director yet.
Well, I love one and three. Two is good, except for the whole Julia Roberts thing was a little weird. The whole, like, oh, you look just like Julia Roberts because you are Julia Roberts. That's fucking stupid. I don't know. But other than that, it was a good movie. But the first one and third one are some of my favorite caper movies, surprisingly. So that'd be interesting to see if they could pull it off and do it with the same... I don't care if it's men or women. It just has to be that movie.
Right. But
those movies were really well... The chemistry of those actors, which at this point, mind you, is irreplaceable for some of them. Bernie Mac passed away.
Yeah.
And
the director is Gary Ross, a guy who's doing the Hunger Games movies.
Oh, wow.
So he's signed on to direct. But Soderbergh and Clooney are both involved with the project, so...
Okay. Very nice. All right. Moving on.
Well, Steve Jobs has been an epic flop. It was pulled from 2,000 theaters, just announced today. It did terribly.
Yep.
It has only made $16 million nationwide, and it's not scheduled to release worldwide. And with a budget of $30 million, they lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't include marketing and whatnot, we've talked about before, so... Yeah. Big mistake. I don't know if it was just because it was the second one.
I don't know if they marketed it enough. To be honest, I don't watch enough TV, I guess, but I didn't get the impression. I didn't get this presence of the Steve Jobs movie. And oddly, it seemed like an echo of this Ashton Kutcher movie that came out a couple years ago. I don't even know how long ago that was. He was still alive maybe when that came out. I don't know. Either way, it seems like they can't nail the Steve Jobs movie thing. And I don't know if it's because people kind of know that Steve Jobs was maybe kind of a dick, and maybe that's all they ever want to know. They don't care otherwise. I don't know. But here we have an example of a story that the public simply either doesn't want to see or that they're just not promoting enough. Because you got Danny Boyle directing it. I mean, the guy, Slumdog Millionaire, 28 Days Later, it slips my mind off the top of my head, but I mean, he's directed a number of movies that show that he's a talented director and he's award-winning and all. Script by Aaron Sorkin. That's huge. That's like an immediate ticket to the Academy Awards, basically, for best screenplay, you know? And then Michael Fassbender is getting rave reviews for his performance.
Yeah. I think it's just people don't want to see it.
Yep.
They don't want to see the story. He has an autobiography that he helped write. Maybe it was a biopic that was just done too soon after his passing.
Maybe. I don't know, because it trips me out sometimes when I think about it. That was like, when did he pass away? 2011? I mean, it's weird to think that it's been a number of years now.
Yeah.
I just don't see them ever... I don't see it ever becoming something. I mean, if you look at this now, you pretty much sent your kid to Harvard, and they couldn't get a job afterwards.
Yeah.
So you're not going to send them to another school, I think. Their college thing is not going to work out for them. So I guess Steve Jobs will just have to live on in print.
Yeah, I think his book definitely has more impact than any film and telling of his life will ever have. So another flop, Rock the Casbah.
Oh, man.
With Bill Murray, Zoe Deschanel as well.
She was in that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know
she was
that.
The one that... She was the star that he took over to Afghanistan.
Oh.
And then he loses her. And it's like... And then it's his task to find her or somebody that could fulfill, like, his singer, find the next great talent or whatever.
Oh.
And then he finds the Afghani woman who has an amazing voice and... But it flopped. It made $1.6 million so far, and it's been off for 2 weeks, so that movie is dead in the water.
Yeah, I kind of could... I could tell by it not getting a lot of buzz that it was not going to pan out all that.
It must have been one of those movies that all the good stuff was in the trailer. Because the trailer looked decent. I thought it was pretty funny.
But, you know, it's possible that also sometimes they don't know how to sell Barry Levinson movies. I saw a movie that he did with Robert De Niro called What Just Happened, I think it was called. It was actually very much about his life, him and his buddy, about being film producers in Hollywood. It had its moments, but overall it was kind of a piece of shit. And yet, this director, he's done some great movies over the years, too. You know, some movies that I thoroughly enjoyed. So, I don't know. Hit or miss. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah. Our last bit of movie news before moving on to casting news is Robin Williams wrote into his will that Disney is not allowed to use any of his voice acting work for 25 years after his death.
Yep.
So, the consequences of this is that Disney had to scrap a fourth Aladdin movie that they were trying to do, which I assume was going to be a straight to DVD movie anyways. They had to completely can it until that 25 years is up,
which is genius. Thank you, Robin Williams, because what were you thinking? You were going to cut together zombie outtakes of Robin Williams? Like, that's horrible. You know, it's one thing to put Tupac Shakur on stage at Coachella as a hologram. That's about as far as we need to take it, folks. Like, until the day comes where we're Futurama and we have heads that are, you know, in jars and shit. Like, he's dead. And you already made your money. You're going to make money off of him still. Forever. Like, you don't need to dig up his grave and sell his bones.
Aladdin was the movie they just took out of their vault and put on Blu-ray for the first time. A couple weeks ago, so
which is weird because do they still have more to come out? Because they better hurry up. Blu-ray's kind of gonna be obsolete in like 5-10 years, maybe. You know what I mean?
You know, I think it's just there's still collectors out there that just and people have to have a physical copy of stuff, like
right. But I'm digital form. That's what I mean. Like, how many more movies do they have in the vault that they haven't Blu-rayed yet?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But that was a big one. Like, I was surprised that it hadn't been on Blu-ray yet. But it was the first time on Blu-ray. It had obviously been on a DVD, but
right.
They remastered a little bit for the Blu-ray release, and
yep,
kind of strange. A little casting news. We talked last episode about Lego Batman. They added two more people to the cast. Ray put in the notes glitter because Mariah Carey is going to be playing the mayor of Gotham. It was rumored she was going to be playing Commissioner Gordon.
Oh,
but
okay,
that's
what
not
I read.
True.
Oh, good.
And she's going to be playing the mayor, which is fine. We'll see.
Really, yeah, who cares?
But,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the better casting is Ralph Fiennes as Albert the Butler, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
I like
cool.
him, so.
Yeah. No, he's cool.
John Wick 2 got a couple more people added to their cast. Peter Stormare.
Stormare.
Ruby Rose.
Yeah.
And Common, also. Oh, he's going to be playing one of the villains in this one.
Yeah. I like Common, although the only movie off the top of my head, I know he's been in some other stuff, but he was in, because I used to listen to his music more than seeing him in film, but then he was in Smokin' Aces, which was such a piece of shit. Well, I'm sorry, that was such a shitty movie. But he was in that, and his character was so weird because I don't know if Common can ever not speak lyrically. He always sounds like he's kind of rapping a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, and he's got a very distinct rap style, you know.
You've seen Terminator Salvation, right?
I tried to block it out of my memory.
Though. Well, he's in that as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh. The Christian Bale throwaway movie.
Oh, God, yeah. Throw it far away.
And our last bit of casting news. Our last bit of casting news. Gina Carano is in Kickboxer Vengeance.
Yes.
The Kickboxer reboot. Well, I guess it's not really a reboot because Van Damme's the coach.
Well, okay, but he's not the same character. It's a really weird thing.
So it is essentially a reboot then.
But we'll get into that. All right, so we got a new segment this week we're going to try out on. It's a quick one. We know we don't have a lot of time for segments, but let's see what we got here. Hot ticket item. That's where one of us comes up with a little thing that we want to talk about that we really want to promote or push out there or that we're excited about, and we just can't help but share it with everybody. Mine is a movie called Spotlight. I was listening to NPR today, and they had an interview with a woman who did the journalism that led to this movie being created, and Spotlight is directed by a guy named Tom McCarthy. Tom McCarthy directed a number of other movies that you've probably maybe or not seen that were all critically acclaimed. Station Agent, The Visitor, Win-Win, Oscar-nominated, most of his stuff has been. He's also an actor. So Tom McCarthy's really hitting it hard in Hollywood. He's doing a great job. He made this movie about the Boston Globe investigative reporting that led to the exposure of all of the Catholic Church molestations of teenage boys and stuff like that. And this movie sounds like it's going to be awesome. I was listening to the interview of the woman who did the journalism for the Boston Globe, and I think she ended up winning a Pulitzer Prize for the work. She was talking about the amount of detail that went into the filming of this movie and how they talked to all of the people that were involved with the actual history, the actual things that happened, and they got all of their input, and they took it all really seriously. And they took all that input, and they added in even to, like, repositioning phones on the set so that they fit what the characters would have actually done or what they actually did. It just sounds like it's going to be a great movie. It's going to be probably one of the big Oscar contenders for the year, so I'm going to throw that out there as my hot ticket item for this show. Chris, what you got?
My hot ticket is Deadpool. I know before I said I'm stoked to see it, and everything that keeps coming out, I'm even more and more stoked. Over Halloween, Ryan Reynolds dressed up as Deadpool and went out trick-or-treating, and go find the video online. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious. Also, it came out that Fincher and James Cameron were instrumental in probably helping get Deadpool greenlit.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, two big Hollywood movers and shakers that helped get this greenlit. Because
I can't think of them working with him.
With Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, I don't think of a time, like, there's no real connection there that I can think of.
No, I don't think they've ever worked together. I think it was the scripts. They read the script. They helped convince Fox to go forward with the project. I got high praise for it, so...
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to that movie.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting... It's going to be a good direction because it's going to be R-rated, and it's going to be violent and gory and not this sort of... more homogenized Avengers, you know, multi-phasic movie series that's come out now from Marvel. It's going to be pretty intense, I think. So.
Yeah. So that's it for the hot ticket. Like we said, short and quick. So our next segment is No Hollywood Bad. For me, it's Through the Looking Glass. The trailers have been coming up online. Sometimes it just doesn't need to make a sequel.
Yeah.
No matter how good the first one is, you just don't need to go down that road again. And for me... they should have just left the first one the way it was and not milk a cow, essentially. And
I got to ask you, because I never saw the first one because I heard such negative things about it. In my mind, I know it made money, but...
I have a love-hate relationship with Burton. Like, yeah. Some of his stuff I love. Others, I don't. Like, I enjoyed the first Batman with Michael Keaton and loved, you know, Sleepy Hollow and movies like that. But some of his stuff just got... it's getting really weird, I would say. The first one was okay. I think the cartoon is better, you know, from back in the day. I didn't see that there even need to be a remake in the first place.
Yeah.
But I thought it was okay. Definitely didn't think that there needed to make a second one.
Now, is Burton...
James Bobin is directing it. He did the Muppet movies.
I don't know. I'm not excited about it. I could care less. I don't know why they keep making these fucking things. I can't... but I know why, because they made money off of them.
Yeah.
I gotta say that my No Hollywood Bad for this week comes a little news, sad news from the David Fincher camp. Well, I mean, he didn't release the news, but somebody did. And David Fincher is no longer involved with the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo franchise, nor is Rooney Mara, who actually was nominated for her first Academy Award for playing the role of Lisbeth Salander. Now, this character got really popular with the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo books that came out of Sweden. Stieg Larsson, I believe his name was, he died before they were released, or before the series was released. Anyways, he never quite got to see the success of them. He was actually like a journalism guy. Now another guy wrote another book to continue it because they were massively successful worldwide, right? So they write this other book, and now Hollywood is going to reboot The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and probably start with this book, is the general. Because now there's been a Swedish film for Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, an American film, which, haters gonna hate, I think is far superior to the Swedish film.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory that Americans maybe intrinsically understand serial killers a little better, but I don't know if that's just an American asshole theory, I'm not sure. But the way that it was portrayed by Fincher, obviously he's kind of a serial king film master in my opinion. But also the way that the actors held their roles, not to say that the actors in the original weren't good too, they just were... Rooney Mara was amazing in that role. She was hideous and beautiful at the same time. The look of the film was crisp. Like, it was great. If you're not going to continue that because it didn't make money, then starting from scratch, again, we're back to this, like, you sent your kid to Harvard and now he can't get a job. You don't send him off to another fucking school. You don't send him to Stanford now. You know, it's not like Harvard just didn't work for you. Like, that's it. You made your effort. Now stop, Hollywood. No. Bad.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on. A little more anger for Hollywood. What the fuck, Hollywood? What the fuck? And I'm going to start that one off by saying that you should stop whatever you're doing that has to do with remaking The Crow. Because you're going to fuck it up. You're fucking it up right now, I can tell, and I don't even know what you're doing yet. But this is what the news has been, is that the remake is coming. And this happens because Relativity Media, which I believe owns the rights to The Crow, has gone under, essentially. They've lost their financing. They went bankrupt. They couldn't make movies that were successful. And they've fallen apart. They own the rights to The Crow, and as a result of that, they are trying to remake it before they lose the property. I think it maybe got, you know, involved in, like, the investment package or whatever. So, fuck you. It's a shitty excuse. What the fuck, Hollywood?
Yeah. For me, my what the fuck is not necessarily negative yet, but it could be, because most video game movies suck. And at BlizzCon announced this last week, Activision Blizzard announced a movie studio. They are going to start churning out movies based on their properties, and the two that they have hinted at that will be made first, outside of the Warcraft movie that's being made, is Call of Duty and possibly a Skylanders film. Which, if you don't know what Skylanders is, it's you buy these little figures and put it on a stand and the figure goes into the video game. What? So, yeah, it's trippy. It's like Pokemon where you gotta collect them all. Like, if you want that character in the game, you have to go buy the figure at the store. You can't just... So it's
a marketing juggernaut, yeah. Basically.
And it was the first of those, and now Disney has their own. It's called Infinity, and the Lego Dimensions game is the exact same way. But Skylanders was the first one to start it. Huh. Nintendo's now doing it with Amiibos.
Hmm.
Talking about doing movies based on those two franchises, which Call of Duty goes all the way from, you know, World War II video games all the way into, like, the future with the recent release of Black Ops 2, which is based in, like, 2060s, 2050s.
Yeah, like, they could literally make... Like, they could just buy out DreamWorks someday and make Call of Duty Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. That's very true. Oh, yeah. So, it depends on how good this Warcraft movie does, which I played Warcraft. I never played World of Warcraft, so I'm not big into the lore of the MMO. But
The
trailer itself looks good, and the CGI and all that looks really good. We'll have to see what hardcore fans of that played the game say about the movie, but
to see if it can find the audience that it's hoping to find.
Yeah,
I don't know what the buzz is like for World of Warcraft players, like fans that have been around for a long time. But moving on, way to go, Hollywood. We'd like to end our criticism on a positive note. So I'm gonna let Chris kick that one off.
There is a controversy on the internet, mainly involving Twitter, called Gamergate, and it involved essentially white males that felt they were persecuted, I guess you could say, into targeting females specifically within the video game industry that were programmers, developers, and calling, you know, death threats and hoping to get cancer. And there were some swatting incidences, which is where cops are called to an address and they say, like, there's a hostage or someone's been shot, and so SWAT rolls in. And
somebody just got a year sentence for that.
Yes, because
that's a big deal. Like,
you're costing, you know, taxpayers money because you're making a face calm.
You're being an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the main targets, a girl by the name of Zoe Quinn, she made a memoir, and Amy Pascal, who is set to produce it, and they're targeting Scarlett Johansson as a lead to play Zoe Quinn, essentially. So I hope this gets made. I think the people that were behind the bad side of Gamergate, the male assholes, essentially, I hope they get what's coming to them, and they get pretty much shit on the whole movie, I hope. So,
there's no call for that anymore.
No. Well, I hope it gets made. Don't let that go, Hollywood. Just make it.
Please do. And for mine, I have a very serious film to talk about as well, actually. So we're talking about The Crow. The problem with The Crow is that a man died so that that movie could be made. Or whatever.
He died during the filming.
But he died for that movie.
Yes.
There's no question about it. Brandon Lee was supposedly killed by shrapnel, which had misfired out of a gun. It was supposed to be a blank, and it just... This is just the way it went. It got lodged in his chest, and it killed him.
Well, the path of the bullet was... It was a real bullet with no gunpowder inside of it.
Mm.
But the firing pin wasn't capped. Wasn't knocked out. Mm. When the fire pin was hit, the bullet dislodged from the shell casing. It got lodged in the barrel of the gun. Then they used the gun later on with real blanks.
Yeah.
And the concussion impact of the blank fired the bullet into his chest. So it was a legitimate bullet that got dislodged by a misproperly handled casing. So,
man,
I watched the whole documentary on it because I loved Bruce Lee and the tragic death of his son. And
yep.
So.
And, you know, for what it was, I mean, it was a lower budget film based on an obscure comic from a time when big comics didn't get good movies. This was a movie that was dark. It was edgy. I was a teenager. I was obsessed with that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just saying don't remake it out of the passion of some teenage boy. The actors that were in those roles, just very much like if you watch Tombstone, for instance, all of the people that played the villains in those roles, perfect. If you were casting anybody in a remake, you would be casting people to basically mimic them, because they were the characters that they needed to be. The only thing that they could do for the comic, because James O'Barr, the author, he was very well involved in that, but the only thing they could do for the comic is add in this, like, space ghost, a dead cowboy, space ghost. There's a dead cowboy thing that happens. And otherwise, it's just a bunch of abstract art in the graphic novel aside from the story. So they were pretty faithful. Remaking that is just useless. But remaking Kickboxer is awesome, especially if you're going to do it right. So way to go, Hollywood, because that's what's happening. Kickboxer Vengeance is going to be coming out, and they've released the photos of Dave Bautista, who you know as... What was his name in Guardians of the Galaxy?
His name was Drax.
Drax, that's right. Guardians of the Galaxy. He's also the villain, or one of the villains, in Spectre, which was released over the weekend here.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, like, he used to be an MMA, or a UFC fighter, I think.
Yes.
And so they've released the images of him as Tong Po, I believe the character's name is the Thai kickboxer who's like the villain in Kickboxer. Jean-Claude Van Damme is not what?
He was a wrestler. He was like the WWE.
Yes, WWE, that's what it is. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh,
sorry, everybody.
We'll start that over.
Yeah.
He was a
wrestler for the WWE. They released the images of him as Tong Po, and he looks pretty awesome. If they do it right, now granted, this is a way to go Hollywood if they follow through with what they're doing so far. It looks like it'll be cool. Gina Carano, who used to be a UFC fighter, who was a badass chick. She was in Haywire, if you've ever seen that. Steven Soderbergh directed a little offshoot movie. Like, he was having like a weird day. He's like, I'm going to make an action film where people kick the shit out of each other. And this woman is like a badass spy assassin. Makes me want to watch it again. Anyways, way to go, Hollywood. Don't fuck it up. Well, way to go. Way to go. All right, so move on to the last segment before we get on the hot topic today, Desert Island movies. This week, my movie is Bandits. I just rewatched it again on Grandma Movie Night, and I gotta say, I saw that movie in a premiere. My mom got these freebie tickets, sent me and my stepdad to go see it with a buddy of mine, and I expected nothing of it. And it's one of those movies that I remember where I saw it. It was down in Horton Plaza. We waited in line to get into the premiere, or it was a preview. We saw this movie, and I just remember being kind of sucked in by the slow but melodic pace of the film. It's kind of mesmerizing. It has kind of the kind of soundtrack that the music's not in your face. It's very subtle background music that you... And watching it, for me, I always had this feeling like the music had been made for the film. But in fact, it has just a, you know, sort of general pop music soundtrack of mixed artists. And directed by Gary Levinson, who we were just talking about with Rock the Casbah. He's done some good and bad movies over the year. I'll give him credit for that. But Bandits, for me, is just... It's a favorite. It's got Bruce Willis, Billy Bob Thornton. Both break out of prison at the beginning of the movie. They're bank robbers. They decide a new way to rob banks would be to sleep over bandits, where they stay with the manager overnight before, and they take their keys into the bank in the morning. They get them to help them rob the bank before they open. Cate Blanchett comes in at a certain point and kind of ruins their little scheme. There's a love triangle going on there. And I don't know, it's just it's a different kind of movie. It's clever. The characters are good. Like I said, the soundtrack is great. And I like it a lot. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. Chris?
So my Desert Island this week is The Big Lebowski.
Mm-hmm.
The dude himself. Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi. Classic cult movie, I guess you could say.
Oh, John Turturro.
Oh, is Jesus?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't mess with the Jesus. Yeah. No, this is a movie I quote all the time with one of my best friends, Charles. I mean, it's such a funny movie. Essentially, guy gets his house broken into. They steal his carpet. He's trying to get his carpet back. He gets involved in a kidnapping scheme, which involves Tara Reid, which is one of the few movies that I'll watch with her in it.
Yeah.
It has Flea as a nihilist.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the few movies that Flea's actually acted in. Another good movie he's in is The Chase.
I was going to say that. That's great.
Maybe talk about that later. Yeah. That might be a future Desert Island movie. Mm-hmm. Might be. They bowl in the movie. There's a scene where he's tripping out.
Yep.
With Julianne Moore. Yeah. Tries to have his baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just a wacky, wacky comedy. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And I think you should watch it.
And yeah, I agree. I that's one of my solids. That's probably an A+ movie for me because I can watch that over.
I can watch it anytime. It doesn't matter.
Post your DVD collection on Instagram, folks. We're going to try and boost up our social media presence a little bit, but mainly we just want to get this thing going and hope that maybe we can spread this on the internet. A while back, I live in an apartment, and I got a little storage shed off the balcony. It's not a very big spot. I had a bunch of boxes in there. I decided I needed to put my DVDs somewhere and a bunch of CDs, so I looked up DIY DVD shelves on the internet, found a cool video, went and bought this materials and made this, like, awesome DVD CD room, and I was so excited about it. And I remember thinking, I'm the only person who's excited about this. Other people are excited that I'm excited about it, but I don't think anybody else is excited as I am. There's gotta be people out there who would also be excited. Maybe we should get people to share their DVD collections, because really, DVD's on the way out. VHS is already gone. You got those collections somewhere? Can you do anything with those? No. But you can still do something with your DVDs. You can still watch them, enjoy them, see movies that you can't get on Netflix. I mean, they're still valuable. So let's appreciate them. Let's pay homage to them now.
Over the next 2 weeks, we'll post ours. Mm-hmm. So either email us your picture, and we'll post it on our Instagram and tag you in it. Or put it up yourself and tag us in it. Mm-hmm. And we want to see what you got.
Yeah.
My collection has been sort of ravaged, because at one point I was moving almost every year, and my DVD cases went into the recycling. And so now they just live in books. I've kept my Blu-ray cases, but my DVDs are now just in binders and books. And
I was there for a while. I had mine in books, and it was heartbreaking. And you know what? I have to say, you do have to be really careful, because if you have them in books and you're too lazy like I was and you don't keep the books closed or you don't keep them covered, shit gets in there with the DVDs. And I've had a few DVDs now where they've had scratches on them that I've had to pull it out, try and clean it. So, so it is sad. That's the thing, is like when you put them away, it's sad for you. And so it's nice to be able to, you know, get it out there, let it breathe somewhere.
Yeah.
And show us what you got.
Just to let y'all know, our Instagram is Stone Redbeard. Mm. Just one long word. So if you go to the website, which nobody uses the website, they just use the app, but it's Instagram.com/Stone Redbeard. There's no and or space or anything in there.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, James Bond, Spectre. Spectre came out November 6th. That was this past weekend. We thought it would be appropriate. Neither one of us has seen it yet. I'm planning on trying to see it this week. I don't know what Chris's plans are as far as that one's concerned. But, you know, here's the thing. If it weren't such a big movie, it's the kind of movie that I probably wouldn't go see in theaters. Like, if it weren't a James Bond movie, we'd have an issue. Because right now, as of recording this show, it still stands at about a 7 on IMDb for a fan rating. It stands at a 60 Metascore. Now, that is dangerously low for a good movie. Because that means there's mixed critical response to the film. Mixed critical response is just not great. Especially when the last film on Skyfall received very high critical acclaim, especially for an action film.
Right.
Now, personally, I don't know if I was on board for the whole Skyfall propaganda. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was so amazing or whatever.
We're going to go over our James Bond franchise. We're going to rate our top five and give you a bad one as well.
Yep.
I'll go first. Number five for me is got to be GoldenEye. It's not the best of the Bond films, but it's the one that got me into Bond films. I okay. wasn't around for the, you know, the Roger Moore or any other ones. GoldenEye got me into Bond. So watching GoldenEye, you know, I also played the video game a lot. You know, showed me the character Oddball. So it's like, well, that guy's not in the movie. Like, where is he from? So you go back and watch one of the old Sean Connery movies. Mm-hmm. And then you start watching all the Sean Connery ones. Mm-hmm. You hit the Roger Moore ones. Mm-hmm. And that really got me into the James Bond franchise. Yep. So, for me, that has to be in the list of my top five. Number four, Skyfall. Thought it was good.
Oh, so you're on the train.
I well, no, because one of them's higher. From Russia with Love, Sean Connery is my Bond. You know, it's... Daniel Craig, I think, has been a really good Bond. I've liked what they've done with it, because he's not the typical Bond. Like, it's not all about, you know, gadgets and whatnot. Which is, you know, weird. But Connery is my Bond. So, definitely not his generation. The problem is, my generation's Bond is Pierce Brosnan. And to be honest, all of his movies sucked except GoldenEye. And GoldenEye was just okay.
Yeah.
It's on my list just because of what it brought me to into the franchise. So then we got from Russia with Love, obviously. That's number three. Number two for me is Casino Royale. I thought that movie was excellent.
Yep.
My favorite Daniel Craig one. Mm-hmm. My number one is Goldfinger.
Oh, wow.
It might have to do with Odd Job, but I thought the story was good. It brought in, like, the kind of cheeky names, because it was it was Pussy Galore, and Jill Masterson was smoking hot in that movie, and, you know, so that's my favorite Bond movie. Hmm. But what I consider the worst, The World Is Not Enough. Now, that's into the Pierce Brosnan era. That was one with Denise Richards, and
that's the one with at the end Christmas there in the Jones, submarine.
And... No, they're on the, like, balcony in Paris, and he's like, I didn't think Christmas came twice a year, because her name's Christmas Jones.
No, but isn't it the one where the villain is Robert Carlyle?
And they're in the
sub with the nuclear whatever. Yeah.
that movie was awful.
Yeah.
So, that's my list.
Oh, yeah. Well.
What do you got?
I came at the Bond series from a different path, which makes my perspective different. For me, I grew up watching Bond in VHS. My dad had all the, you know, the premiere collection VHS, and they all had the Pink Panther cartoons that would play at the beginning of the movie. And so I have a very fond nostalgia when I think about James Bond movies as a kid. Growing up, they became sort of that comfort blanket for the holidays. So whenever, like, well, I lived in Oregon for a couple of years, and I remember my favorite thing, would be to get Thanksgiving dinner to go from the restaurant I worked at when I'd work my shift on Thanksgiving. And I'd end up doing this, like, all week because it was so delicious. But I'd get this bomb Thanksgiving dinner. I would go home, and the James Bond marathon would be on, like, TBS or FX or whatever. The beauty of it was, like, back then, they didn't have Netflix and stuff like that where you could just watch whatever you wanted all the time. So if you didn't have it on DVD, it was right there on television. You could just sit and watch any of them all day. It was amazing. So I have more of an appreciation for the older ones. So for me, my number five is Casino Royale, because I think that for a reboot, it does an amazing job of continuing the series with respect while also really elevating it to a point where it hadn't been in years. You know, it's easy to pick on Pierce Brosnan. It's not his fault. It's weird because when you look at him, you're like, oh yeah, he would be Bond. Absolutely he would be Bond. You know, it just makes sense that he would be a Bond. But he just never got the screenplays. You know, he just didn't get... By the time they were making his, it was like they were all the writers from, like, the 80s action movies that just couldn't find work doing anything else but making James Bond movies anymore. The villains were cheesy, just too much. So, unfortunately, I don't have any of his on my list, because I actually thought that even though I only did two of them, Timothy Dalton was a far better Bond than Pierce Brosnan was, just in a different way. He was more serious, more reserved.
Yeah.
but also very much like the cold British spy of the 80s feel. Like, he had a members-only jacket. Like, and I grew up watching Living Daylights over and over again. So that's my number four. I was in love with Olivia Diabo, the chick who plays the cello player in that movie. Anyways, number three, I had a tie. I kind of cheated a little bit here. I was a big fan of the Roger Moore movies over the years, and as a kid, I could rewatch them because the stories were kind of for kids. I mean, they're childish in a lot of ways, and it's simple and corny and whatever. But I will say that I think it's arguable that Roger Moore got a lot of the cooler or more fun scripts as Bond than any other Bond did. Sean Connery obviously is like the definitive Bond. You know, and that may have been true of anyone who started the series the way that he did, but he really sold it. He really was Bond. Roger Moore was just the guy that was keeping it warm, and I don't think he did a horrible job. He just, you know, he's just different. Yeah. But man, my number three is a tie between Moonraker and Diamonds Are Forever. When I was a kid, Moonraker was my far and away favorite. Hate me if you want. But I loved it. I love that Jaws gets a happy ending, and he gets a happy ending, if you know what I mean. I love that there's Dr. Goodhead. What a fucking name. And the guy, I think the villain's name is Drake. And he's this guy. It's funny how, like, these old school, like, the supervillains were always this guys that look like hunchbacks, and, like they honestly look like they couldn't beat up anyone. Like, if they were in prison, they would so be the bitch immediately. But in the real world, with all their money, they were just total badasses. But anyways, I loved Moonraker. And Diamonds Are Forever, the hitmen, the buddy hitmen, you've seen that one? With Mr. Friend and stuff like that? Oh, God, I love those guys!
Oh.
They were just so... It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, kind of horrible, but I just love it.
Yeah.
And when I went to Vegas last year for the first time, I purposely went to Circus like two or three times, but I actually never found the Circus Sweet part. Like, we had never ended up going there early enough to make it to that show the way it is in the movie, Diamonds Are Forever. But anyways, I'm rambling. Number two for me is another Roger Moore, Octopussy.
Just because of the name, is that all?
No, I think it's really cool. I think the Fabergé eggs, I think the villain, not the Maude Adams character, the Octopussy character, but the guy that's with her. I just like that one a lot. It's a fun movie. Like the train stuff, the circus stuff with the dagger throwing twin brother assholes. But my number one, From Russia with Love. It's the quintessential Sean Connery. It's exemplary of its time. The scenes where they're floating in the gondola underwater, and they're in the gypsy camps, and the scene with the hitman, the guy trying to climb out of the woman's mouth, you know, in the apartment window is like her mouth or whatever, and he gets shot. Everything about it, all around, it's just my favorite. It's just such a charming movie that it's like the James Bond. Now, I know some people might be mad. Oh, there's no Goldfinger, there's no Dr. No, there's Thunderball. I feel like From Russia with Love really nailed it for me. Now, if I gotta throw away one, it's gonna be You Only Live Twice. I'm sorry. Sean Connery, that's why it's hard for me sometimes, because he's also responsible for my least favorite James Bond film. And You Only Live Twice is the one where he goes to Japan, and they have to disguise him as a Japanese man so he can infiltrate some. It's just so stupid. It's so fucking stupid, and he looks like a Vulcan. He doesn't look like a Japanese person. He looks like Spock's father. It's horrible, which would make sense that Spock's father might have actually been James Bond as a Japanese man. Anyways, that's what I got for the James Bond. But there's other franchises out there, and James Bond is a quintessential British spy, right? It makes sense, you know, but really, I can't think of another. It's James Bond. You know, there isn't another British spy.
No.
He's the. So, America has tried a number of times, and mostly been successful at generating our own spy franchises. One of them that didn't get off the ground was Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins. Back in the day, Fred Ward stars as a New York cop who gets handpicked by a secret organization to become a super spy. But he's kind of a loser piece of crap. He has a shitty diet, doesn't take care of himself, which is weird because he doesn't look all that unhealthy, but his face is kind of weird, like, whatever. He's just drinking coffee one night, eating a donut on his night shift, and sees some crackheads running down the road and decides to chase after him. And they beat him up, and somebody pushes his car into the river, and he wakes up, and he's had facial surgery, and some weird shit's been happening, and all of a sudden he's being trained by this, like, 70-year-old Korean master who's going to teach him how to be a badass. Now, granted, it's an 80s movie, but the Remo Williams series, the Destroyer series of novels, was very much the American equivalent of what Ian Fleming was writing as far as James Bond was concerned, especially in his time. So it's fascinating to me that it never actually got picked up as a property that could be successful or looked at that way as now. And I think they should re-explore that. Because it's a cool, cool movie and a cool concept. It just needs an update. It's old. It's out of date. For me, I love it. I get nostalgic when I watch it. It's not for everybody now. Mm-hmm. However, we can look at instances where America has been super successful. And one of those instances is the Bourne franchise. Yes. So I've ranked mine. So what do you think, Chris?
For me, the legacy has to be last.
Now, why is that?
I think it might just not be a big fan of him.
Oh, of Jeremy Renner?
Yeah. Mm. I think that's what did it for me.
He's got to ease off the Hawkeye a bit.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the where he was the bomb diffuser.
Oh, the Hurt Locker, geez.
The Hurt Locker.
Oh, you know, God. Such a bad movie.
Yeah. So I think it was Renner that kind of ruined it for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'd probably have to put Ultimatum number 3.
Really? The third Bourne movie?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Supremacy 2.
So, basically in order?
Essentially they are in reverse order. Well, I think the first one, because it was unique.
Yeah.
It exposed the character. Mm-hmm. I thought the action was great in it. The action is great in all four of them, to be honest. Mm-hmm. They're all great movies. It's almost like, I would say, the three with Damon are like 1A, 1B, 1C, and Renner's 2.
Yeah.
So, you can almost throw them in any order. I can watch Matt Damon ones. I can watch any of the three at any time.
Yeah.
But I think it just, for me, the flow works pretty well. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the first one has to be my favorite just because it introduced the character and it was a good story. Mm. I liked it.
All right. Well, we are jumbled on that one, which is fascinating. I love that. So coming in number 4 for me is Bourne Supremacy. I remember I'm a big fan of Doug Liman's work in general anyways as a director, and this was early on in his career. He directed a movie called Go that got some independent credit. It's kind of amateur when you look back on it now, but it's a fun movie to watch. But Bourne Identity really was, I think, a big breakout directorial performance for him. As an action director, and somebody that could direct an action film with substance to it, and it really did introduce this character, you know, Jason Bourne, as this new concept that sort of captivated America as a character. When they came out with the second one, it was the first time that Paul Greengrass was directing, and Paul Greengrass is kind of hit or miss for me as a director. If you watch a movie like Captain Phillips, it's a good movie, I enjoy it, but I don't like, now, United 93, that's one of my all-time favorite films, and I will say that his director style really nailed it on that film, but it doesn't always work for me. What was the movie that he did with Matt Damon? It was called
Green Zone.
The Green Zone. Oh, God. Sometimes I watch a movie that he makes, and I'm just like, why did you make this? This was stupid. You could have done this or said this some other way without all this stupid action in my face that doesn't really do anything, doesn't make any sense. It was like that movie Safe House with Ryan Reynolds, you know? It was just very bland. Or Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington. Anyways, so I wasn't sure about Greengrass taking over. Ultimately, it ends up number 4. Legacy, I actually really like Legacy. And I don't think it could ever quite rank as high as the first and third for me, just because it is kind of a different animal. And I'm not so sure about how much the ending sticks out from other chase scene endings that we've seen in the Bourne movies. But Jeremy Renner worked as that character for me, and I liked the Rachel Weisz stuff, but what I really liked was him in the wilderness stuff at the beginning, and then the moment that he had with that actor who's going to be in Star Wars.
Oscar Isaac?
Yes! Oscar Isaac. Anyways, he's got a great exchange with Oscar Isaac. He's trying to get his meds and whatever. What I like about Legacy is that it... You know, I thought when Legacy was coming, I was like, oh man, they're just milking it now and putting Jeremy Renner in there. What are they doing? But I thought that it was pretty well thought out. I mean, it was obviously, you know, based on the ideas of the series. I don't think it's based off of a book, though. Maybe it is. All I know is, as I felt that watching it, it really kind of modernized the series. It kept the series fresh by showing that what they were doing wasn't just some obscure, like, we can't describe it, top secret government thing that they just didn't actually have a way to explain. Now we're starting to see, oh, well, it's a viral, like, genetic mutation and stuff. You're like, oh, wow. Superhumans with possibility. Like, I'm a scientist. I read the journals. I'm like, wow, this is slightly, you know, and so for me, it's able to surpass the second one. I'm sorry, when the second one opens up and she gets shot, and I was like, what the? Well, that was an easy way to get rid of the baggage. What kind of bullshit is that? Why'd she get shot, man? She gets shot in the head? What the fuck? And I thought it was a little convoluted. I thought the editing made the plot twist a little confusing, and then all of a sudden Brian Cox is like fucking shooting himself in the head, and wow, man, it was just... So, that means that my number two is number one, The Bourne Identity. I like Doug Liman a lot as a director. He's only flubbed a little bit once with Jumper, which I think was more Hayden Christensen's fault. But we can move on to another series that's been pretty successful in the American front of spies, Tom Clancy.
Mm-hmm. Mainly the Jack Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the five movies that he's known for are all based on Jack Ryan. There are other characters that he has more books upon. William Dafoe's character, John Clark. They haven't done the movie that basically tells John Clark's story yet. Rumors it might happen. I don't think it will because it's kind of a dark book. That one's Without Remorse, if you haven't read it. But the Clancy series, you have Hunt for Red October, you have Patriot Games,
mm-hmm.
Clear and Present Danger,
mm-hmm.
Jack Ryan,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Some of All Fields, and you have three actors playing the same character. Jack Ryan was a young Jack Ryan. They had Chris Pine playing him.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably my least favorite of all the five.
Yeah.
Some of All Fears, that was Ben Affleck. That would probably be number four. Clear and Present Danger, Hunt for Red October, and Patriot Games all had Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to say...
Wait, what did you say? Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games?
No, Clear and Present
Danger was Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin was Hunt for Red October, yeah. My bad. Hunt for Red October and Clear and Present Danger are probably my two favorite of those characters of Jack Ryan. Patriot Games, based on the IRA assassination or attempted assassination of a British monarchy, has Sean Bean in it. It was okay, but for me, I think it's hard. Hunt for Red October, Clear Up, and Danger. I don't know which one I would go one or two, but those two are definitely my favorite of the Clancy series.
All right, well, for me, Clancy's a little different. We have different opinions about this movie. It's fascinating. So for me, I don't know what it is with Patriot Games, with the Irish thing. Okay, I love the movie Blown Away, and I am part Irish, so it can't be an issue with Irish stuff. But when I watched Patriot Games, the IRA stuff, and it just bugged me. It just makes me feel uncomfortable. It was just weird, the whole hostage thing. I don't know, I didn't like it, and I don't know if I just wasn't ready for that Harrison Ford character yet. And I remember the first time I saw Clear and Present Danger, I wasn't sure I was all that much of a fan of it either when I was younger. But anyways, so coming in at number five for me is actually Patriot Games. Coming in at number four, though, is Jack Ryan. So to tell you how much I don't like Patriot Games and how weird it is that I don't like it. I mean, I know it's weird I don't like it, but it makes me so uncomfortable that I would rate it lower than a film about the same character that I actually fell asleep during and therefore never finished watching, which is Jack Ryan. I don't know what happened there. Chris Pine seems like a good idea. You know, he seems like Jack Ryan, that would be he's a better idea than Ben Affleck ever was, which is usually the case in most roles. I love you, Ben Affleck. Sometimes. But all I'm saying is I don't know what happened with Jack Ryan. Kenneth Branagh directed it. Just didn't do it for me, though. But anyways, Coming at number three for me, though, Hunt for Red October. Now, I'm going to get a lot of hate on this one. I know it. I know it. The only reason that I would rate Sum of All Fears higher than Hunt for Red October is I don't really care for sub movies all that much, unless it's Crimson Tide. But overall, I'm not a sub movie guy. I like Hunt for Red October, but there's something about the sprawl of the story that is Sum of All Fears that I appreciate a little bit more. And the Ben Affleck aspect of it I can kind of ignore because I feel like Liev Schreiber and Morgan Freeman make up for it a little bit. But that's a tough one for me because far and away my number one is Clear and Present Danger. As times evolve, that's actually become one of my Desert Island movies, I would say. Like, at the, it is. Anyways... So, Clancy, I like Clancy. I think it's fun. I'll be interesting to see if they can do anything else with Jack Ryan at this point that would reboot it, you know?
They've pretty much done all the books, and obviously he's not alive anymore, so...
Right.
Unless they reboot it just with a new actor trying to replay right. those stories, I don't really see them adding much to it. They can go into different avenues with some of the stuff he wrote, like I said, like Without Remorse, which is William Dafoe's character in Clear Present Danger. There's a few more books based on his character and Tom Clancy's writing. But they could actually take some of the video games that they've done off Clancy's work. There's a series called Splinter Cell that's based off a covert operative.
Right.
Pretty much just Black Ops, who goes in by himself, essentially. And there's a game called Rainbow Six, which is about siege and taking down terrorists and stuff they could turn into.
These games always made me feel stupid when I was a kid.
There's, you know, it's all based off his work. It could go though, Rat. As far as Jack Ryan, I think Jack Ryan's done as a character. Which I'm okay with.
Another American series. I'm not saying it pridefully, maybe a little bit, but I'm just saying, like, it's not like a boastful thing. I'm just saying that it's interesting to me. I noticed as we were going through these that a lot of these are American. Maybe that's just my, you know, American-centric asshole mentality. I don't know. But another series, Tom Cruise has really made something out of the Mission Impossible series. Despite Grandma's attempts to find reasons to not like Tom Cruise, I have shown her the way that he is everything that Scientology could ever aspire to be is in Tom Cruise. Grandma just doesn't like him because he's short. She thinks he's got short man's complex.
He does.
I'm sure he does, but he wears it well, and he makes lots of money off of it. So I don't
he's
think
a crazy person.
I don't think it's a complex. I think he's just a short man who is powerful, and he exerts his virility everywhere. Well, anyways, Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise, woohoo! So what do you think, Chris? What do you got? Now, we both have to be the assholes in the room and say that we have not, neither one of us has seen Rogue Nation.
Right.
Which I would like to see.
Yes. So going to my rankings for the Mission Impossible series, I probably have to go with number three as my number one. I'm gonna go one to four because we can't judge Rogue Nation because we haven't seen it.
Yeah,
so
right. Yeah.
I'm gonna go 1 to 4. Number one would have to be 3 for me,
which is the one that J.J. Abrams took over.
Right, Philip Seymour Hoffman. He was amazing in that.
God, he was good in that.
So good. The addition of Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames. I've always loved Ving Rhames. He's in all of them though. For number two, I'd probably have to go Ghost Protocol. I really like that one. Yeah. Number three would be the original, the first one.
Yeah.
Brought the character to life again. John Voight's character, the betrayal at the end. Spoilers. For a 20-year-old movie.
Yes. Which is crazy to think it's that old now. And when you see it now, and you see Tom Cruise and how he looks now, it's so different. But at the same time, he also looks like he hasn't really aged in the newer ones, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy.
So then for me, obviously, number four would be number two, so...
Yeah. You know what's weird? We are both spot on for this one.
Really?
I totally agree with you.
Wow.
Coming in
I'm
at
surprised.
Coming in at number four, number two. I'm sorry, that movie's a piece of shit. If I watched all four of them, or five of them, I would skip that one. I can't watch it anymore. It's ridiculous. The characters or the villain's too cartoonish. The voice thing, okay, cool, whatever, but it gets a little like, stop doing all of that ridiculousness, you know, can we come up with more than one gimmick, maybe, and spread it around a little bit? And so they do that in the movies that follow, but they don't, in the second one, I just felt like, oh, John Woo, you know, bless his heart, but the guy, can you keep your doves out of your movies, and like, can you just stop sapping everything up? It's just so over the top, and... You know, I don't follow his work anymore. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of people that really respect him, but It was just too much for me. Too much. And the action sequences on the beach at the end were just like, ew, stop all of this. It's ugh. So I was not super excited when 3 was coming out. I remember that. I was going to see it in theaters and like, I was like, well, whatever, hopefully it's good. And I remember just going to see him like, yes! It was awesome! It was so intense! And I, you know, who is this director? J.J. Abrams. It was when he was, like, new and just coming off of making Alias and really building a name for himself. And, you know, right, like you said, I actually, how did I forget? Philip Seymour Hoffman, just the one of the best villains in an action movie in that I can think of. You know, he just so cold, you know, and just so effective. Maggie Q is a great addition to the team at the time. She didn't make it past this movie, I don't think, though, either. And even Carrie Russell. If you want to see Felicity get a brain aneurysm. That shit was intense, man. Those bombs. Ugh.
Yeah.
So, and with that one, what they showed, I feel like, was that they could use the face gimmick in a way that was made sense. It was practical enough. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the whole like thing that they had set up towards the end, and so that's a nice thing. I like that a lot. So for me, yeah, I agree. The first one would be number 3 as well. It holds up pretty well, but Brian De Palma is also kind of a, you know, he blah blah blah. He rambles like I do. But anyways, number 3, excellent, and Ghost Protocol I would say is the number 2 after that. I agree, and it might be true that Rogue Nation maybe eclipses the first one from what I've heard, but I'm not sure. You know, that might just be because they're 20 years apart, like you said. You know.
Yeah.
So moving along past that, we've got some serious spy movies out there, or what you might call more serious spy movies. Some of those include Argo. Ben Affleck won some awards for that a couple years ago.
It's a brilliant film.
At the Very Oscars. Good. You know, and I... that's one... I like Ben Affleck. I liked that movie. But I think I gave it a... I think I was on the fence on that one. B+, A-. I enjoyed it, but I don't know that I would ever need to rewatch it. It was probably an A- that I could say, like, yeah, I saw that. I don't know if I need to see it again.
I've seen it once. I really enjoyed it. I think maybe one more viewing.
Yeah.
And then that would be, oh, I need to see it again.
Yeah.
But I thought it was great.
Yeah.
So it would teeter in that B+, A- range. Probably fall closer to the A-.
Okay.
Probably not a film I would have to watch again after a second viewing. But one more viewing would be fine. There was enough that you could pick up in the movie to watch a second time.
Yeah. And Ben Affleck, I think he's actually a really good director. I don't always care for his choice as an actor, although he was great in Gone Girl. I don't imagine somebody else could have done that role quite the way he did. But he's not always my favorite in the roles that he picks, but as a director, he makes really good choices, and Argo, I think, was a really good choice, just not one that needs to be rewatched. Another one of the more serious, although it is kind of lighthearted in a lot of ways, is Charlie Wilson's War, which is more of a practical spy movie about Charlie Wilson, who is a senator, a Texas senator, who actually... helped to fund a covert war that helped to kick the Russians out of Afghanistan so that they didn't gain a foothold there, but that ultimately opened the gate for the Taliban and a bunch of other crazies to come in and take over. So, what's interesting about this movie is it's a fun movie directed by Mike Nichols, who was a Broadway director for a long time, but he also did a lot of other good movies too, but this movie was directed by him and had Julia Roberts in it and some beautiful. Charlie Wilson was such like a ladies' man, and there's all these beautiful women in it, and they're all these up and coming actresses, and they play Charlie's Angels and whatever. And it's a really charming movie, but also a really emotionally impacting movie because it talks about refugees over there in Afghanistan and what the camps are like even back then and what they had to go through, and then how easy it was for them to get the funding for this covert war, and just we're talking about tons of money. And how easy it was to lose any support after the momentum was gone. Nobody cared about fixing Afghanistan, and it's a really important historical lesson there, you know, because that's where Osama bin Laden came from. You know, that's, you know, and so it's a really interesting spy movie in that sense, because he was a senator working as a spy, doing stuff that senators don't normally do. And then another one that's kind of on a more serious note, but also kind of a comical tinge to it, is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, is the story of Chuck Barris, the game show host for The Gong Show, and other creative things that he did over the years. Well, he came out with a memoir at a certain point that said that he was a spy working for the CIA as an assassin for many years during the during the Cold War. And, a lot of people just think he's insane. They just think he actually might suffer from serious mental illness, some sort of, like, schizophrenic delusion or something like that. But, cool movie with one of my favorite actors, Sam Rockwell. I love that guy. He plays Chuck Barris, and Julia Roberts is actually in that one, too, and George Clooney. Mm-hmm. And George Clooney actually directed it. I'm not always into George Clooney movies that he directs, but I did really like that one, so... anyways, then we got some action spy movies that are out there, too.
Yeah. Enemy of the State. Mm-hmm. You have Will Smith and...
Gene Hackman.
And
great movie.
Good action. Shows, well, supposed technology of our satellite capabilities and spying on people and wiretaps. And
that was back in the 90s.
98, I think, is when that film came out. Like, and just kind of creepy that if we have that kind of technology, it's kind of crazy. We're seeing a lot of stuff leaked from the Snowden stuff about what our government is actually capable of, and it's kind of scary. So another action-based one, we got Spy Game. Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt, Robert Redford. Oh, just a great movie.
Another great movie. That's a solid A movie for me.
Yeah.
And maybe not the first time I saw it, because I think I was maybe a little too young to quite understand it. I had to get a little older to... Robert Redford is really... he's a really great actor. And when he is involved in a project, it tends to elevate the project. And that was definitely one where him and Brad Pitt working together was...
magical.
Yep, Tony Scott. Those are both actually Tony Scott films.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah. Sad. The last one, it borders the comedy action genre. Yep. Mm-hmm. True Lies.
Yep.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Tom Arnold.
Yep. Tom Arnold. God, he was a revelation when this movie came out.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it and just being like, who is this funny fucking guy? Yep. He was married to Roseanne? Like,
oh, yeah.
He's way funnier than she is. Like, it was so strange.
Tia Carrera's in it. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis.
And Eliza Dushku.
Yes, his daughter. Yep. I mean, the greatest character of all, though, is Bill Paxton. Just the cowering idiot. Just, it was awesome. I mean, it's almost the same role he played from Aliens. You know, just the coward and pissing his pants and whatnot. But
oh, God.
Just a great film.
I got a little dick. It's pathetic.
So that's action comedy. It's a great, fun film from the mid-90s, 94. Mm-hmm. Directed by James Cameron.
Yeah, and really a departure from a lot of the stuff he did. It's really like a standalone James Cameron film. It's not a property they've ever discussed really seriously making a sequel to. And at this point, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'm sorry, like...
you're too old.
You're just too old to do that. Yeah. You know, there's no explanation for why they would they would have you sitting at a desk. I don't mean to be a dick, but...
maybe give it to a son,
Patrick.
Spies
that live long enough get a desk job, you know? Like, so it'd probably be a pretty boring movie, I hate to say. Maybe.
All right, so the last is just pure comedy.
Yes.
Whether it's a spoof on it or just a comical take on it, we have Top Secret, made in the 80s, Val Kilmer. Trying to infiltrate Nazi Germany. Just a hilarious...
I'm so glad you've actually seen that.
Yeah, I love it.
Dude.
I have it on DVD.
I would be amazed if my dad still has it, but I used to watch the VHS that he had recorded. It wasn't even, like, the movie. It was recorded from, like, TV or from another movie or whatever. God, I would watch that shit on replay. I would take it out, put it in the fucking... the 57 Chevy Bel Air rewinder.
Just put it right back
Put it right back in. And I didn't even understand all the jokes, but I just loved that movie.
Yep.
And watching it as an adult, then you're like, oh man, I didn't get that joke when I was a kid. Or, you know, so many times I walk around and I'll say something like, you know, souvenirs... party tricks.
You forget where it even comes from.
Yeah.
It's just ingrained in your persona.
Nobody knows about it, and then you'd have to explain it to anybody. But God, that is a classic. For me, that's an A-plus movie, because that's one I've seen so many times that it really is part of like who I am. It's amazing.
Yeah. You also have Get Smart. Mm-hmm. It was a TV series a long time ago. They remade it, did a movie with...
Steve Carell,
mm-hmm. Correct. Nah.
And it was indistinguishable from the movie Date Night and just about every other movie that Steve Carell makes that tries to be very successful. I don't know why that is, but when the man makes a movie that goes kind of under the radar, like Crazy Stupid Love or Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, those are both great movies. It's weird to me that they are not successful movies, because Crazy Stupid Love with Ryan Gosling and him in it, I remember watching that and just being blown away by how... sure, it's a chick flick, but it's really well written, so it doesn't matter.
Yep.
And same thing with Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. That is a really emotionally effective movie, and it's on. I think it's on Netflix right now. I highly encourage people to check it out, because I remember just being, I just laughed a lot and really enjoyed it, because it's honest, it's genuine, and those movies don't do well. And these movies they try and push, these generic ones like Date Night and Get Smart, I'm sorry, but Get Smart was just like, ugh, it was bland. I think it's like a C movie, maybe, you know, just barely entertaining enough.
Yeah.
So we'll have to end it on a positive note. I will say that the one running series of spy movies that are funny is the Do Austin make you Powers horny? Series. Yeah. You know, it's funny because the first one, when I first saw it, I mean, I can watch it now, but I didn't really care for it. I like Mike Myers a lot, and I liked him a lot then, but I wasn't really feeling the Austin Powers. I thought it was just like too much. But whatever they did when they made the second one, I remember it being just being one of the few times where I was like, oh my god, how did they get so much better in the sequel? And it's so funny when you first see it. And then the third one, just as funny, I felt like.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the third one and just having so many moments where I'm just like, anytime they did a silhouette gag with Mini-Me or some other character, holy, oh man, I was dying laughing. And so, I, you know, this is one of those things where it's been a number of years now, and I'd be stoked if they'd made another one, you know?
Yeah.
As long as they did it the same as they were doing.
Yeah.
So, for me, I'd say probably the first one is kind of a B-, and then the other two are probably solid A movies for me. Because they're just, like, they're funny, well-crafted films.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree. I think the second one, you have, you know, Seth Green and...
Yep.
You know, being the son, and you have Robert Wagner being number two, and it's like, we make more money doing this than anything else, and it's like, Heather Graham, smoking
up. Oh, yeah.
Oh, smoking up.
Oh, and the things they do with, like, Tom Cruise playing Austin Powers, little cutaways and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they just do it. They
and then the third one, adding his father, and that was great. The first one, I definitely, like, kind of like a throwaway one. It was okay, but... Two and three were definitely great. And how old does Mike Myers look now? He probably could still pull it off.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything where he looks like all that hideous. The last thing I saw him in was Inglourious Bastards, though, so.
Yeah. Make a fourth one. It was funny.
You do it.
Yeah.
Do it, Hollywood. New segment right there. Boom.
Yeah. A sequel we would actually approve of.
Yeah. Stamp.
Yep.
Of approval. Alright, so that's all we got for our spy edition. Go check out Spectre. It sounds like a lot of people already did go see it, but the reviews aren't great, so I'm gonna give it a shot this week. I'm really hoping I gotta get a certificate. So I'm hoping it's worth it, and I will have a review for you next time.
Yeah, so I'll go see that. I'll also see The Hunger Games by the time we do our next podcast, because that comes out in 2 weeks. So
I won't, because I missed the last one. I'm such a hater.
Yeah. Well, I'll watch it. I'll give you a review.
Next week, we will have Director's Chair coming on back, along with the rest of the regular segments. Next week, we'll be talking about the Coen brothers in the Director's Chair, because of Chris reminding me of The Big Lebowski. We might as well talk about some of their other great films.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. And then we will also have a hot topic for you. We'll be doing the Pixar movies. We're going to talk about our favorites, talk about the ones we don't like, what we think they should do more of, what they are doing more of, and all in time for you to go see The Good Dinosaur in theaters, Pixar's second release this year. And if it's anywhere near as good as Inside Out, well, we're all in for a treat, I think.
Yes, indeed.
So we'll talk about them, and then we'll talk about everything else.
Yep. So hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/StoneRedbeard. Same thing on Twitter, twitter.com/StoneRedbeard. Mm-hmm. And send us those pics for your DVD collection / Blu-ray collection. However you have it set up, however it's decorated, we want to see it.
Yep.
If you don't have an Instagram account, email it to us. We are stoneredbeard@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We'll post it up there, tag you in it. We want to see those DVD collections. Within the next 2 weeks, we'll both put our own setups up on our Instagram account. And we want to see how you celebrate your movies.
Mm-hmm. Be proud.
Yes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, my name is...
Redbeard.
And this is Stone.
This has been Stone and Redbeard. Thanks for hanging out. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.